Okay, today is the 14th of November 2008, and I'm with Mr. George Yambesi at Utumishi House in Dar es Salaam. Mr. Yambesi is the Permanent Secretary in the President's Office for Public Service Management. And just before we get started, I'd like to confirm that you've consented to the interview.
Yes.
All right, thank you. Okay, so I'd like to begin this conversation by talking about the role that you've played in civil service reform here, as well as elsewhere. And if you've worked on similar related issues, you can also bring them up. So could you tell me what you do now and what jobs have brought you to this position?
Okay, I'm permanent secretary. I'm the chief executive of the ministry, but I'm also the program manager for the public service reform program in Tanzania. And I've been associated with the reform program in Tanzania since 1993, so I may say for the past 15 years. I joined the program first as a national expert on redeployment, because initially when the program started, I think there was quite a big program of retrenchment. But in Tanzania, we said we would retrench people with a human face. So I was tasked actually to design the human face part of retrenchment. So I became the redeployment officer, basically working on programs to offer training, to offer counseling, entrepreneurial training to people who are being retrenched from the public service. And then subsequently, I worked also as a national expert on capacity building for ministries, departments, and agencies, and other institutions. And subsequently, I went on to become a director of policy development. And under that particular function, I was charged with the coordination, the overall coordination of the implementation of the public service reform program in Tanzania. And then, of course, subsequently, I became deputy permanent secretary and ultimately permanent secretary.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
So most of this interview will revolve around your work in the public service reform and civil service reform. And I'd like to begin with some general questions about civil service reform and then move on to specific areas where you've had experience.
Yes.
So before we start, could you just give me a brief history of civil service reform in Tanzania?
Okay, civil service reform in Tanzania, I think I don't know where one would put a line, because when you look even immediately after independence, for example, there was quite a big program of Africanization, you know, to empower Africans, you know, to build their capacity so that they could take over from jobs which were being done by predominant Europeans and Asians immediately after independence. What I'm trying to say, and then we had decentralization in 1972 within Tanzania, where the first attempt to decentralization. So what I'm saying is that I think we have had reforms, you know, reforms of the civil service on and off, but maybe if you look at the current phase, you may say that in earnest, recently we started them, in 1989, yes, because in 1989, with the support of UNDP, we did some diagnostic studies on the size of the civil service in Tanzania. We did the civil service census to determine the number of civil servants. We did organization and efficiency reviews. So quite a number of diagnostic studies to try to see exactly what prevents the civil service from making the contribution which it is supposed to do. So those studies ran for almost two, 3 years. And then I think the first full-fledged program for the civil service began in 1993 as part of the structural adjustment program. So, and that's why the initial focus was mainly on cost containment, trying to look for ways to reduce the cost of running government. So therefore the focus was trying to reduce the size of government, restructuring ministries. I remember, you know, departments were reduced by almost 25%. We retrenched quite a number of people, I think close to 80,000, but that includes people, but also, you know, other redundant positions which were still and so you know, the drive was on basically that link to structural adjustment, and that was the program which we implemented between 1993 and 1999, yes, 1998 to 99, yes. And then so when that that particular program ended in 1998, I think we did conduct an in-depth internal evaluation to try to see you know, what has actually been the impact of that initial phase of the program. Because for one concern was that it is true we had taken measures to reduce the cost of running government, but the the glaring issue which was coming out was that, but services were not improving. Yes, we had reduced, but services were not improving. So what was, we thought, what was again wrong? Because, the objective was actually to improve services, to improve access to services, and people could get the services which they wanted. So as part of that, I think that's when we came to the design of the first phase of the public service reform program. With a strong emphasis on improving systems, improving policies, you know, to assist in the efficient delivery of services. So we came up with the first phase of the public service reform program in the year 2000, which we implemented until last year. Yes, until last year. And then from early this year, we launched the second phase of the public service reform program. This time around with more focus on results, accountability, and responsiveness. Yeah.
Okay, and could you talk about some of the issues and challenges facing the civil service?
Yes.
Before the reforms were started, perhaps when the reforms in 1983 and the reforms in 1998?
Uh-huh. Okay, some of the challenges. Well, I think one could have seen in some areas there was excessive bureaucracy. I think excessive bureaucracy was one of the challenges. But another challenge was the whole question of incentivizing the public service. So the pay was very, very low, you know, and which was a big demotivating factor. Mindsets, yes, mindset was still a problem. But also the cost of running government was still high, if I may say. Maybe the challenges, I would say, before the civil service reform program, yes. But most of those challenges, I think, have remained, especially, you know, the problem of remuneration. I think much as we have done quite a lot, because under phase one, we did formulate the medium-term pay policy.
And this is phase one starting in 2000?
2000, yes. We did formulate a medium-term pay policy, and which provided a framework under which the government has been operating to address the issue of low pay. And there has been considerable improvement, but overall pay is still low compared to the issue of mindset change. I think it is still a problem. Yes, it is still a problem. We've improved the processes a lot by introducing performance management systems, improved policies and other things. But I think the key challenge still remains the mindset of public servants, you know, to make sure that those systems are put to use, are put to good use in terms of improving services and making sure we can, you know, we can deliver better services to the general public in Tanzania.
So could you talk about the goals of the civil service program?
The current
specifically,
one?
Yeah, the current one. I mean, so how specific those goals are and who set them?
Okay. Of course, the goals were set by ourselves because I think as you can see, even the implementation of the program, we're implementing the program as part of the ministerial functions. So it's fully mainstreamed. We don't have a secretariat or a separate, unit which is implementing the reform program. So we have the key areas. I think we have. We have quite a number of goals. But as I said, the major theme is improving performance, results, and accountability. I think is the major theme. But one of the areas is on policy development. We have as a key, in terms of improving policy processes, capacity for policy development, and regulatory capacity within government. That is one of the areas. The second area is this whole question of, as I mentioned, that during the first phase, we put in a lot of systems. Now we are focusing on making sure those systems are really put to good use. They are used in order to improve services and so on. And those services include systems, for performance management, systems for appraisal performance, system for monitoring and evaluation, system reporting systems, and so on and so forth. So that is also another area. A third area is improving human resource management within the public service. So we systems for managing human resources, human resource planning, and other human resource system. The fourth area is the whole question of pay. Of course, it is still a challenge. So areas of addressing how we can improve continue to improve public service pay, other things related to pay. And then another area is on leadership development. So because we know, it's critical for reform programs, I think leadership comes. So having innovative leadership to steer reform, but also to make sure, the government functions. So it's one of the areas to building capacity of leadership. We are planning to establish a leadership development institute within Tanzania and so on and so forth. But already we have the other things like the Tanzania Global Development Learning Center, where, various training is conducted, including leadership training. And then another area is the whole question of responsiveness and what I would say stimulating demand side accountability, giving greater voice to our clients and to the general public, in terms of voicing if they are getting the right services, or if they think there are things which are not working, to enable them to be able to raise those and be heard. Yeah. So I would say these are some of the major goals of the
program. And could you talk a bit about the motivation for civil service reform?
Yes, the motivation for the
reforms.
For the reforms.
Was it? A couple of examples that we've come across.
Yes.
The fiscal needs, public outcry,
yes.
Or political pressures.
Yes, yes. One is public outcry for better services. I think has been one of the areas, because people have been complaining. For example, people want to get title deeds from the minister, or people are claiming for better. Why can't passports be issued quickly? So that was one. But I would say also there was a political. I think political given that it was public outcry, so a political response to try to address some of those issues which were seen to be, you know, seen as the public is complaining about. Yeah, and so that was that was also another motivation. But I think also one would say that how would I put it? It makes the work of public servants, you know, more rewarding. Yes, in terms of. In terms of seeing that what we are doing as public servants is being accepted by the people, you know, people are appreciating, you know, the various steps we are taking to improve services, to cut the service delivery times, and so on and so forth. So it also provides the motivation. Yeah.
And. What relationship did politicians and government have with the reform process?
I think for Tanzania, I think I would say we've been lucky because I think we have been working very, very closely with the politicians. Because for one thing, all the phases of the reform programs have been approved, have received the highest, you know, the highest political endorsement. In that they have all been approved by cabinet before we start implementation. Yes, so they've been endorsed. But also secondly, I think we've been lacking the fact that there has been, you know, commitment from at the top. Because when you look at President Kapa did, the current president, they are all pro-reforms. And that's why even the launching of the program has been done by President Mkapa in the year 2000, President Kikwete early this year. So, and even in the program design, I think, for example, when you take on the area of leadership, I think we are involving quite a lot, you know, the training of ministers and other political leaders, exactly. And we have frequent seminars for members of parliament and so on and so forth. Yes, yes. So there is a lot of, because we recognize actually in order to have, you know, an effective reform program, you know, you have to have politicians on board so that you can be able to move. Yeah.
All right. I wonder if I could move on to a specific,
yes,
one of the specific aspects. And I know you talked about your earlier work as a redeployment officer. So if we could talk about retrenchment and staff size.
Yes.
Many countries obviously have a problem with the size of their civil service.
Yes.
And Tanzania seems to have done a very good job in controlling and reducing that. So when you were... When the attempts to reduce the size were started, were specific goals set, and what forms did those goals take?
I think specific goals were set in terms of reducing the size of government and the cost of running government. But as I mentioned earlier, those specific goals were basically driven by the fiscal considerations, yes, because it was part of the structural adjustment strategy. Yes, so for example, when you take here, you know, when we started, we had about 355,000 public servants. At the end of the program, the number had come down to about 260,000. Yes. That was by 10, but also what we I think and then we managed to put in system now to control the wage bill so that you know, numbers were now more controlled, you know, we knew who was entering and so on and so forth. Yes. So those systems are the ones which helped us to make sure we could control the size. But again, of course, as I think as you know, there have been developments now, then, you know, came the Millennium Development Goals, you know, the poverty reduction strategy, and now we have the Mkukuta, the, you know, our medium term strategy for growth and reduction of poverty. So again, the numbers now have, you know, in terms of improving access to health, education, and so on. Now the numbers are again coming up. But at least what we can say for Tanzania is that there is a framework. Now the increase is within that framework, yes. Yeah.
Okay, and so some of those systems that you say are used to control the size, what are those? What sort of systems have you used?
We put in place a human resource and payroll system, yes. Which helps us to manage the payroll in accordance with the resources which are present. But secondly, we have put in approval processes. For example, if it is new recruitment, first of all, it has to be budgeted for. But again, even though it is budgeted, approval has got to be, has got to be sought for.
Where is the approval normally sought?
It's from the Chief Secretary for new employment. Yes, and if it is for replacement, that is for people who have died, for example, so that they can be replaced in the payroll. That is done by the Permanent Secretary, Public Service Management. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And how do you think the fact that the early retrenchment happened as a result of the structural adjustment goals?
Yes.
How did that influence the ways you went about it and how successful you were?
Okay. I think, of course, as one of the results, of course, since it was part of the structural adjustment, is that I would say other considerations were sort of overlooked. Yes, overlooked. For example, as a young nation, we were still facing shortages of human resources. Yes, in quite a number of areas, but also by reducing numbers just on the basis of fiscal considerations, it means you didn't take into consideration human resource planning, human resources planning and succession planning requirements. And therefore, so one of the impact has actually been suddenly, for example, now we find that we have an aging top of the public service. But, then there is sort of a gap immediately at the senior level. And then at the bottom, we have very young people who are coming now. So you can see it now, because when we cut numbers, it's certainly people who would now be sort of in the senior and principal position. Yes, so who will take over from the top once these top people are retiring. But these people now are retiring, and they are, people to take over is becoming very, very difficult in some of the areas. So those are some of the considerations. So yes, we may have responded to fiscal considerations, yes, but other considerations were overlooked in the process.
So when you did the retrenchment, what methods did you use to reduce the staff size? Did you retrench people? Did you provide them severance packages?
Exactly. As I said, retirement? For here we said it was retrenchment with the human face. So the severance packages were provided, but on top of that we had something which we called the golden handshake, which was, of course, taking into consideration that given the level of salaries, the severance package was not very much. So we also offered something which we called, a handshake, which sort of augmented the amount which was paid. But there was also payment for transportation, to place of domicile, transportation also of luggage to places of domicile. So on and so forth. And as I mentioned, there was training, there was counseling which was provided for these people so that they could see in which other areas they could engage themselves. We offered entrepreneurial enterprise development training to help them start new businesses or improve some of the businesses which they had. Or we offered retraining in some, so some of the people could retrain so that they could get other jobs. Yes.
And where did you, how did you fund the severance packages and golden handshakes?
How did we?
Fund the, where did you get the money to pay the severance packages?
It was provided by donors.
By donors,
yes,
okay.
Yes, yes. But donors provided through a basket funding arrangement, they did provide resources for that, yes. Especially under the phase one, but okay. under civil service reform program, I mean, yes.
And were there any political constraints that limited the success?
Of course, there was a lot of resistance in terms of cutting numbers. Yes, because as I said, that meant some of the facilities, service facilities, couldn't get enough staff to run them, and so on and so forth. So it wasn't very popular.
And how did you deal with those, with that resistance?
I think with that resistance is, as I said, as I mentioned, it was driven by the fiscal considerations. So, you know, the explanation was that, you know, in order to restructure the economy, we had no options except to take some drastic measures to make sure that we can, we can return the economy on a path for development. Yeah. So a lot of communication was done, yes, by the leadership to try to explain why that is happening and what we would expect in future.
Could you talk briefly about the work that UNDP did at the beginning, and the help that they provided?
Okay, UNDP initially, as I said, they mainly funded the diagnostic study. Yeah.
And what sort of diagnostic studies were those?
As I mentioned, one was on the size of the civil service. So trying to get to the bottom, what, for example, why was what was behind the expansion of the civil service? What were the key considerations and how that could be addressed? So that was one of the studies. But the other study was to carry out a civil service census. To determine exactly how many public servants were there, so that then you can compare that to the size and see whether it is affordable or not affordable. So that was also one of the areas. The other area was to look at skill gaps. Yes, skill gaps within the civil service. Where the skill gaps, in what areas, what specializations were lacking, and so on and so forth. So that was another area. Yeah.
Do you know what they found specifically within the skill gaps?
What?
Do you know what skill gaps they found?
At that particular...
Yeah. If you can't remember, don't worry.
Yeah, it has been some time. But there are quite some skill gaps in quite a number of areas. Yeah.
And how did civil servants react to the changes, to the right sizing?
Of course, they resented the retrenchment. There is, but some volunteered.
Okay. Yeah,
some did volunteer, because we also said that it was an option for people who wanted to volunteer to go out. They could do so. And some did volunteer, but others did resent.
Was that just those who were retrenched, or those who remained as well?
No, especially those who were retrenched. But even those who remained expected that once the size was reduced, maybe salaries would go up much faster. Yes, but again, that did not happen.
Okay. Well, I've got some questions about pay policy coming up.
Yes.
And do you have any sense of what people who were retrenched are doing now, what they did with those severance packages, and was the human face effective?
I think it was effective, because most of the people were either re-employed elsewhere, yes, because as I said, we did offer some retraining. So that and others did start businesses. Yes, they did. They start small businesses and so on and so forth. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I wonder if I could ask you some questions about pay reform.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you mentioned that that you attempted to do pay reform and mm-hmm. increase the salaries.
Yes.
And could you talk about the major changes that you've made to pay policies? And what
major
the changes you've made to pay policies? Okay. In the recent reforms?
One was, of course, the enhancement of pay. We have a policy where we are, at least we consistently improving pay. And there has been quite a remarkable increase over the past 8 years. So the other one was also to reduce, to consolidate pay. So reducing the number of allowances which are paid. Because in the past we used to have quite a number, but we have reduced that one to that. The third thing I think is apart from the enhancement, I think those were the two major issues which were contained, yeah. Apart from the general enhancement in the first few years, we even attempted to implement the selective accelerated salary enhancement scheme, the SASES scheme, which was basically meant to fast track those key professionals. Yes, towards the medium-term pay policy, but that program was discontinued for lack of resources. So I think the major focus has been, improving pay, but also, streamlining pay within the public service. Those are the key focuses of.
Sure. Could you talk about the medium-term pay policy?
Yes.
What exactly was it? When was it implemented?
We started to implement it in 1999, and what basically it was saying, as I say, is focused on the enhancement of the pay for public servants, but with major focus on mid-term professionals, because the ones who make the public service tick. So they were to be given priority. So if the general increase were, for example, 10%, professionals would get sort of 15%, 15 or 20% increase.
And so the pay changes that happened at different rates, at different levels?
Yes.
Okay. And did you use the private sector wages at all in setting the medium term?
No, we used them just in the analysis, but in terms of setting, I think because I think they are too far apart. Yeah. But we used them as a sort of a goal, which would ultimately, because one of the aim was to make public service more competitive. Yes, more competitive in terms of. In relation to the private sector, yes. So we've been using that as a guide, but I would say it public service pay for some areas, it has become quite competitive, especially when you look at the normal cadres within the public service, the general staff.
Yeah.
But when we look at professionals, I think that's where. It pays. It's not yet competitive. Yeah.
Sure. And you've mentioned earlier in this interview that there were that you haven't been particularly successful in getting pay.
Yes.
Up to the levels you'd like to. Do you know why? Do you have any thoughts as to why you've struggled?
It's resource constraints. Yeah, it's resource constraints.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have any ideas about how to get around those resource constraints?
it's quite difficult. It has proved to be very, very difficult. Yeah, because of course you know there are very tough trade-offs. As I say, it's not easy because you know, you have to link on one side you have to link pay and the size of the public service. But then when you look at Tanzania is a big country, you know, and you'd like to see, and services are spread throughout the country. You have dispensaries, health centers, you have to have primary courts, and so on and so forth, to all corners of the country. Now, so it becomes very, very important. On one side, you need people to mend those service points. But on the other side, it costs money. Yes, and on the other side, you have the challenge also of, you know, improving pay for these people. So do you increase pay? If you cut numbers, which means you deny access of services to some people. So it's, as I'm saying, it is a very difficult trade-off. It's a very difficult trade-off. Yeah. So the only response is first economic growth, maybe to increase the quantum of resources so that we can be able to meet some of these challenges. I think so.
Okay, and have there been any attempts to? You talked about incentives, and have there been any attempts to join pay changes with performance contracts?
No, I think in Tanzania we would implement that in the future, but not for now, given the low level of salaries at present. Yes, because you know, what you are giving now is not yet even enough to meet some of the needs, then it becomes very, very, you know, it's difficult really to then to go to performance based pay. That has been our own feeling. So we have been postponing that until later. Yeah.
But you have implemented some performance management.
Yes, performance management systems, yes.
Could you talk about those quick and briefly?
Okay. One is we introduced strategic planning in all ministries. We've introduced strategic planning in all ministries, so we have strategic plans which are renewed, and they are used as the basis for annual plans and budgets. And also, so it is on that basis that we, you know, individuals, we have individual objectives so those, they are cascaded to departments and then individuals. So now we can appraise the performance of individuals, although we cannot link that to pay for the reasons I've just mentioned. So that was, it's one of the areas where we've done. So we've introduced it because initially we had a secretive performance evaluation system, which was just filled in by the supervisor without the knowledge of the person who was being evaluated. But now we've moved to, you know, on the basis of the strategic plans, we've now moved to open performance appraisal with the actual targets which are emanating from the strategic plan. We'll put in place client service charters, you know, sort of explain the kinds of services which is going to be provided by the various institutions. Human resource recruitment systems have been put in place. You have human resource planning and succession planning, you know, on the basis of training needs assessments and so on and so forth. We are putting monitoring and evaluation systems. within the public service. So we have put in systems for communication, education, communication, and education for public servants on the basis of a number of programs. Yes. So there are quite a number of systems which were put in place. Yes.
What effect do you think they've had? I'm particularly interested in the shift from secretive to open performance evaluations.
I think it has had the impact of actually improving performance. Yes, but also even the perception, because I think now you know even the employees, they are happy about the new system, because now you know I sit with my directors, yes, and we discuss on the basis of the strategic plan. We discuss with each director, how are you going to deliver on the strategic plan, given the resources and the target which I've given you. And we discuss those. And after 6 months, we sit again for the mid-year review, yes, where I call each director and we say, yes, these were the targets. You said by the end of the year, you would have implemented this. How far have you gone now? And how does that compare with the resources you have used? And what are the prospects for you achieving the targets by the end of the year? Yes, and come at the end of the year, you know, the directors come with their own assessment of their own performance, and I make an assessment, and we sit and we discuss. Yes, yes. So it has become quite productive. Yes, and improved even the working relationship. Yes.
Was there resistance to these? To this when they were first implemented?
No, there wasn't much resistance actually. Actually, problems were in setting targets. That was the biggest challenge, yes. Because, you know, for government work, it's not very easy to quantify and measure. It's quite challenging. But we started slowly and we've been improving. Yes, so there wasn't resistance as such, yes.
But you have made improvements in measuring.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. I wonder if I could talk to you about promotions and appointments.
Yeah, okay.
And what changes have happened in the promotions and recruitment systems?
Okay. In 1998, we introduced what we call the Public Service Management and Employment Policy, which basically the focus one was reintroducing meritocracy in recruitment and promotion within the public service. So, and in the year 2002, we passed the Public Service Act. So initially, what we had is that all positions were advertised. All positions were advertised. So, if there are openings within the public service, those would be advertised by the respective ministries. Interviews would be conducted, and then the most suitable candidates would be recruited. So if also for promotion. But then I think last year we did make some amendments to the Act. And now what we are doing is that we are only advertising for new entrants. You know, only fresh entrants. And then for the other positions for promotion, first of all, we start by considering internally on the basis of performance. Yes. So first of all, we look internally on the basis of performance. If there is no one, we look through the broader public service. If there isn't a person within the broader public service, then we advertise it.
Okay.
Yes. So that's how we the amendment which we did. Yes. 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 And that was basically to respond to the fact that, because when we were advertising even senior positions, invariably we got people who most did not, you know, and don't have the public service culture. It became a problem. Yes, it became a problem. Secondly, most did not have the experience, yes, the requisite experience. And we found that thirdly, we were losing institutional memory. So what we said, I think the amendment which we did was that, of course, that the principle of meritocracy must remain. We must recruit based on merit. But we said that for promotion and other senior positions, we would, on the basis of the open performance appraisal system, look first internally. Yes. And if there is no one who qualifies on the basis of merit, it's when we would open it up. Yes. Yes. So that's the amendment which we have now. Okay. Yeah.
What has been the public's response to these changes? Are they aware of them?
They are aware of them.
Do they support them?
They are very supportive of them. Yes, yes. Especially, you know, the focus on merit, with the focus on merit, we also decentralized the recruitment of public servants. Now various permanent secretaries can do the recruitment, can promote people, confirm people and promote them, while initially that was done centrally. Yeah, so now, the essence of that is on performance management, to enable the permanent secretaries to have control over all the resources which they need to deliver on their strategic plan. So to have control on the financial resources, the human resources, and the physical resources which they need to deliver on their strategic plans. Yeah.
Right. And what are the major? What remain the major challenges in terms of this performance management?
In terms of
performance management and meritocratic recruitment.
Okay, meritocratic recruitment. I think the key challenge is to make sure they are fully implemented. Yes, yes. Because much as I said, we have introduced them, but when we make an assessment of ministries, departments, and agencies, for example, some have gone very far, others not. And in most cases, you find it is a question of leadership. Yes, leadership. Some leaders are pro-reform, and they've moved quite far in terms of their implementation. Others have not. So there is the challenge of leadership, but also there is a challenge of change of mindset. Yes, change of mindset is still also something which is remains. Some public servants they are slow to change. Yeah, slow to change and to adapt to the changes.
Okay. I wonder if I could ask some questions about training programs and capacity building.
Yes.
Specifically because you've said that you had experience with that. And you mentioned that you identified capacity gaps, particularly back in the late 80s.
Yes, yes.
What have you done to fill those gaps?
Okay. One of the system which we have in place is that each ministry must have a training program. Yes, each ministry. So each ministry has a training program, which is normally updated each year. It's normally updated in terms of identifying what are the gaps, and how and what training programs are going to be undertaken. And it is mainly updated on the basis of the performance appraisal which is done. Yes, because one of the things which is assessed during the appraisal is for each employee to see maybe there are some gaps in terms of training, which can be done to assist that employee to improve. So it is on basis. So all the training interventions are on the basis of this training plan, training program, which is for each ministry.
And so, yes. How many people go through those training plans? Does everybody in the ministry go through, or
everybody in the ministry is for all levels? Yes, okay. Everybody, yes.
But
yes.
The content is based on the appraisal.
Exactly, based on the appraisal. Based on the appraisal mainly. But there are some also for some groups, for example, there are some what you would call key skills. which may be offered depending on them. For example, in some cases we do offer communication skills, for example, just for a group, and report writing skills or things like that. So mostly on the basis of the appraisal, but then other core skills which we think are still lacking, you know, from broad groups of observants, yes, are also incorporated in the plan. But of course, then in most of the plans, you know, the constraint again is on resources. Yes, so we have to prioritize also.
Who does the training? Who conducts the training?
Some training is conducted by the Tanzania Public Service College. We have a public college. We have the Tanzania Global Development Learning Center, where courses can be accessed online, you know, and elsewhere. We have other training institutions within the country, but we also some training outside the country is paid for in various countries. Yes, so institutions maybe in Malaysia, Singapore, Britain, elsewhere. So depending on the nature of the training,
All right.
Yes.
When you have these training programs, do people rotate through the programs? Are they done at the workplace, or do people go and sit in classes?
As I said, it depends on the nature of the program. But we have some programs which are in-house. We have programs which are in-house. So others, people go to institutions outside of the public service, which offer specific programs. Yes. Or in some of the programs, we do invite trainers. Yeah, we do invite trainers who come, and then they conduct training for.
And those are both local groups. And foreign trainers.
Exactly.
And the programs, the training is mainly done in which language?
It's English.
It's in English.
It's English. Okay. Yes. Almost exclusively in English.
So in some countries, civil servants lack basic literacy or numeracy, which can be a problem for day-to-day work. Is this a problem in Tanzania?
No, it's not for civil servants. Yes, okay. Because there are certain, you know, basic qualification which one has to have in order to enter the public service. Yes.
It's also often a concern that people who are trained leave the civil service to use their skills in better paid positions in the private sector. Has this been a problem?
No, it's not a major problem. For us, it's not a major problem. One is that, for us, the public sector, the private sector is still very, very small. In Tanzania, it's still very, very small. So, but secondly, and given the nascent nature of the private sector, normally they don't train people. Normally they don't. The private sector. So most people, they are not attracted by the private sector because the place they know they can get training and their capacity developed is within the public sector. Yes. So it hasn't been a major problem, but maybe what you can say for the new private sector, and by that I'm saying, for example, there are quite a number of international banks, for example, which are setting house here. Some international companies which are paying very well. Yes, those at least now are posing quite a big threat in terms of. And they are drawing quite a number of people from the public service, and that is a very recent phenomenon. Yes, but on the whole, I don't think we haven't lost many people to the private sector now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder if I could talk about. So the reform process.
The reform process, yes.
And
uh,
if you could talk about some of the ways that the limited resources you've had available to you have shaped the reforms you've done,
mm-hmm.
or the types of reforms that you've attempted.
Yes.
So are there any ways that you could suggest that Tanzania has been successful in getting around resource constraints?
I don't think we've got around resource constraints. I think we've tried to make the best use of what we were able to get by mainly focusing. I think focusing the reform programs on areas which we thought were critical. Yes, areas which we thought were critical, because. Invariably, as elsewhere, reform is a very expensive undertaking. It's a very expensive undertaking, and particularly in a developing country like Tanzania, where you still have other development challenges which are still you're still facing. You know, you still have to improve access and quality of education, health, water, and so on and so forth. So it becomes very, very difficult, that's where I think the role of development partners, I think, has been key in terms of supporting, in terms of supporting the implementation of the various reforms in Tanzania, so they provided resources to supplement government contribution to improving. To implementing the various reform programs, and that has been key. Yes.
And what role did the donors play in establishing the reform agenda?
The goals of the reform. I don't know about in other countries, but what has happened in Tanzania, apart from the civil service reform program, beginning with the first phase of the reform program, the goals of the reform program were based on our own assessment, of what we thought were the gaps. So what we did is we carried out an assessment, we broadly defined what we thought were the responses to the gaps which we were experiencing, and then we presented that to our group of donors. That this is the direction which we think will be able to address the kind of reform program. So we engage them in that discussion and refining on what we thought is going to be the reform agenda. And that has continued even for the second phase. So I would say here, actually, the reform agenda, particularly for the public service reform program, has been driven by Tanzania itself, on what we thought is important in terms of furthering the agenda of the reforms. Yes, and fortunately, donors have supported us and come up and supported us in implementing that. Yeah.
So, have you had any problems with? Where donor goals have been different from your own goals?
Where there's some in some marginal areas, yes. Because I wouldn't say we agreed 100. They agreed 100% with what we are proposing. But again, then we would engage them because I think our funding arrangement is a basket funding arrangement, where all donors put resources in a basket. Yes, to support the implementation of the agenda which has been, identified by the government. Yes. So there are, within that framework, of course, there are framework where we engage the donors in terms of how we are implementing the program, the use of resources, the various reporting mechanisms, and so on and so forth.
I mean, have you gained anything from other countries' experiences? Have you looked at other countries' models for reform?
We've looked at some countries like Singapore, Malaysia, New Zealand, and some other countries. Yes. But I must say also, in Africa, most countries have been looking to us for experience. for experience within Tanzania. And I think actually it has been quite one of our strengths. I think we have been always trying to see what we can learn from other countries. That's why if you look over the years, Tanzania has sponsored and hosted three regional meetings on public service reforms in Africa. Yes, they've all been hosted by Tanzania, and we have reports from those meetings. Yes, so to try to bring African countries to discuss about reforms, but see how they can share their knowledge and experience in furthering the various reform agendas.
Well, that brings me quite nicely to one of my last two questions.
Yes.
Which is, are there any aspects of Tanzanian history or context that mean that it's the lessons that you've learned here may be inapplicable to other places,
inapplicable
or specifically Tanzania?
Yeah, okay. We've been a peaceful country since independence. I think a peaceful country with a stable political system. I think it's with a stable political system and therefore even the development agenda, I think that is one of the key of the key things. Political leadership has been consistent, and and by that I mean we had Mwalimu Nyerere, then he ruled and he retired. President Mwinyi came two terms, he retired. Mr. Mkapa. So that smooth transition of leadership also, I think it has created a very conducive environment for even sustaining the reform effort. Yes, because we all understand, you know, reform is a long-term undertaking. It's a longer term undertaking. So the political context has also been very, very good. But we have had a lot of support from development partners in terms of providing resources, you know, and for the reform program. So that is also something. It has been a strong point. What else can I say? I think that continuity in institutions too, leave alone leadership, but also in institutions, one can see there has been quite a lot of continuity, and that also would account for a specific. A specific circumstance for Tanzania to be able to sustain the reform program. Yeah, I think I would say those are some of the things. Yes. But I think also we, in terms of even the bureaucratic leadership, I think we've been fortunate to have a bureaucracy which has been passionate about reforms. Yes, over quite a number, because when I look at Joseph, you know, Joseph was managed the reform for quite some time, yes, and then after that there was my predecessor who served for some time, but she was also from within. I took over, so there also has been even in terms of the management of the public service program, there has been a lot of continuity. So a lot of institutional memory in terms of how we've moved with the reform program. I would say that also has been quite instrumental. Yeah.
All right, and finally, if you had a chance to write a handbook for people managing civil service reform, what kinds of topics would you think would be most important? And what would make this handbook most useful to you? Were you starting again?
Oh, there are quite a lot of things I think you one would like to put in a handbook. quite a number of things. Of course, one would be on the challenges of reform. I think you would like to focus on what are the key challenges, but maybe even before the challenges, the context for reform. I think you have to have certain preconditions, I think, for reforms in terms of what kind of systems need to be in place, what kinds of mechanisms, have to be there,
what would you think those would be?
Some of the preconditions I've mentioned in Tanzania, you certainly need a stable political system, political commitment to reform is there, because political commitment is there, then at least you are also assured of getting resources for reform. Yes, because at the end of the day, it comes to the distribution of resources. Now, do you put money in reforms or others? Is reform a priority? So that would also be there. And then the kind of people maybe you need in terms of steering the reform program itself. And namely, the capacity to manage the reform process itself, I think is also important. But also, how do you bring in feedback from the general public in terms of the implementation of the reform program? What mechanisms would you use to capture that feedback, but also to use that feedback in terms of improving how the reform program is progressing? I think there are quite a number of things in terms of systems, capacity required, the context, certain preconditions which are required.
Good. What feedback have you received, and how have you used that in your reform process?
We've experimented with quite a number of things. For example, we normally each year we have a public service week, where we have exhibitions on services which are provided by the public service, and people are free to go there, to air their grievances and so on and so forth. We have radio programs, we have television programs where we put up information about what we are doing in terms of reform, and people are free to call us, to write to us, to email to us, what are the things which they think need to be improved, and so on and so forth. So we've captured all that feedback, and we normally, in the design of the program or when we are reviewing the program each year, we try to see on how we can factor in some of those things which we are receiving. But under the current phase of the program, I think we are also trying to see for strategies on how we can capture more voices. Yes, because we have done the things which I've told you, but we think we need to do more in terms of increasing demand for accountability from the general public. So how we are going to engage more civil society organizations is something which, those are some of the things which we are currently looking at. Yeah.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish the interview?
Maybe something else. I would say reform is a very difficult undertaking. Yes, a very difficult undertaking. It needs a lot of time. But it is also something I didn't mention. It's also important to have champions of reform. I think it is. If you have people who are passionate about the reform, they are. they are ready to go all the way out to push for the reform agenda. I think it is also important.
What sort of people have those been in Tanzania?
In Tanzania, I would say within the public service, there are areas where you have people, but also the leadership. Yes. But also, is by saying that reform is a difficult, it's a difficult undertaking. It implies that you need, at times, certain bold decisions need to be taken. Yes, and there should people should be ready to take those bold decisions. Otherwise, you know, reforms may stall. And then I think another important thing is consistency in implementation. Yes. Because if you lose momentum with reforms, I think is then it becomes very, very difficult, you know, to sort of, because you would sort of be like starting afresh. Yeah, so it's important to sustain. It's important to sustain the reform program. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.